Podtacular, the unofficial Halo Universe podcast, presents episode 590, The Untold Story of Halo, from 3 to ODST via the movies, recorded live on July 25th, 2017. Hello everyone, welcome to Podtacular, the unofficial Halo Universe podcast. I am your host, Duststorm.
I'm your co-host, Godzilla T.
And I am back from San Diego. GT's back from a nice game night on Friday, which I hopped in and watched. And we are back to talk about the second part of the complete and untold story of Halo.
What he means to say is that he stalked me Friday night.
Along with Laird's idea. It was Laird's idea. So Laird has this little travel PC, and we plugged it into the TV in our hotel room, and we watched the stream for a little bit. I watched for probably about 20 to 30 minutes before I had to head out to a panel, and then I think Laird probably watched for a little bit later on, and then we crashed the party on Friday. But it was fun to watch.
Darn Xbox app. Oh.
Looked like you guys were having a fun time.
it was a lot of fun. We had a good crowd Friday night.
Good. So we have a little bit of news to go over. Some small things that was talked about at Comic-Con or kind of around Comic-Con. There wasn't anything big Halo related as far as DLC stuff for Halo or anything on the Halo TV show other than the fact that it's still in the works. But we have a couple of other smaller article things on Waypoint for us to go through real quick. So we're going to jump through those really fast, and then we're going to dive into our main topic of discussion, which is going to be part two of the complete and untold story of Halo. And again, I have my handy-dandy Surface with the whole article on it that we'll be going through. I'm sure GT has the same thing. But let's go ahead and jump into some of the San Diego stuff. So they showed off the Blaze of Glory, which is the new, what was Boomco, but now they're going to rebrand it to Halo Blasters. And it's the Blaze of Glory shotgun. And it's a pump action similar to the Needler, for anyone that has the Needler Boomco dart gun. And there was also the Fall series of figures on the Mega Constructs side that was also shown off. And Mega Constructs also built out an ODST drop pod for people to go by and take pictures in. So that was cool too.
That actually looked pretty cool.
It was, although it was a little flat in compared to a lot of the other detailed giant constructs that they've made in the past. This one was, it didn't really seem to have much detail in it. But it was still pretty cool to be...
But, you know, you can't build a Mantis every time.
Yeah, that's true. Just compared to some of the past stuff.
I give the guys props that build the things.
Fair point.
That is patience.
Fair point. One of the folks that's usually at these conventions, too, his name is Martin. He is the one that designs all these big constructs that they make for these conventions. And they ship them out, and then they ship them in pieces and then put them all together when they get on site to these conventions. And the hatch wasn't on the drop pod, but it was on the floor. Made it look like the hatch was popped out. But it fit in pretty nicely once they put it up on the rest of the drop pod to fit in. And people can go in there and take pictures inside of it. Of course, I was too tall to actually fit in it. So they're not quite made to scale. But it was pretty close.
Well, no, actually, they probably are. Your average ODST is shorter than you are, Dust.
Okay. I guess I wouldn't fit for an ODST
then.
You're
not exactly the average guy, you know.
I'm still not Spartan-sized.
No, you're not Spartan-sized. But yeah, if you ever know, like in Halo 3, if you notice, Chief's drop pod is bigger than the ODSTs that he dropped with.
I did not notice that.
Well, at least it appeared to be bigger. Could be just camera angle, but it did look like it was a bigger one.
I'll just say, I'm not too much taller than Nathan Fillion, and his character fits pretty well in one of those drop pods.
well, let's say that his character wasn't to his scale.
Okay, I'll concede. Regardless, it was pretty cool. They had little LED lights in there for the drop pod lighting effects, and that was pretty cool. So people got to go up and take pictures, and the 405th or Anvil Station that some of the former 405ths are now a part of, they went by on Friday and Saturday, and we had the opportunity for people to come and take pictures with them. They got pictures in and around the drop pod on both of those days. So it was really cool to see Halo still present at Comic-Con, even though there wasn't a panel that was devoted to Halo. One of these days we'll have some information about the Halo TV show, and we'll actually have a panel to hopefully at one of these conventions to talk about it. It would be nice.
Yeah, I hope it's sometime this year, because this is getting old on this. It's starting to get kind of in the Halo movie era here.
I was thinking the same thing. Something that we'll discuss here in a few moments is seemingly familiar with the Halo TV show events that are unfolding. So we had those product announcements there and those things shown off. There's going to be some more announcements at New York Comic Con this year, which I'm not currently planning on going to, but maybe I'll get dragged into it somehow or some way. But other than that, that was pretty much the kind of Halo-ish announcements that were at San Diego this year. So just a few product things. Unrelated to San Diego, there's also the Halo 5 tournaments at the Microsoft stores. So something that actually some pretty good friends of ours have been working on for a while. Kenny over from Ultimate Halo and DJ Blue over from Griffball Hub was actually working on this at one point, and I don't think he's been working on it too much since. They've been doing tournaments at the Microsoft store in Seattle. And that is being, or in Bellevue, sorry. And that's being expanded to Microsoft stores across the world. And it's going to be monthly tournaments. The first one is going to be on August 6th, and it's a free-for-all tournament. Free-for-all is up to 6 players. And it's in Microsoft stores all over the country and all over the world. So there's 3 and 4 in Canada that they're going to be at, 1 in Australia, 1 in Puerto Rico, and the rest of the states that have stores. There's going to be 2 other ones, 1 September 3rd, which is a team doubles, and then 1 October 8th, which is a 4v4 using HCS settings. And those are the first 3 tournaments that they're going to be having at the Microsoft stores. So if you have a Microsoft store near you and you're not necessarily into the competitive scene as much as like HCS, but want to just kind of go and play for fun, then you can head on to your local Microsoft store wherever you have one close by and go and play for some cool prizes, meeting up with some other Halo fans and really just having a good time with Halo. They have all the store locations up on the Halo website. It's in your latest list of news articles, so you can just go over there and find it and go look for some Halo tournaments to participate in. I'm going to try to go to the one that's in Tyson's Corner, Virginia. It's about an hour and a half away from where I am, and I'll be away September 3rd because that's PAX weekend. But I'm going to see if I can at least go to the one on August 6th and see what it's like. Is there a Microsoft store by you, GT?
Did you look at the list?
Yeah, but I forget exactly where you live.
I'm dead middle of the list and the country, Kansas. Yes, there is one, and it's about 20 minutes away from me.
Okay. I didn't know where Oak Park Mall was compared to where you were in Kansas, so.
As the bird flies, probably about 10 miles.
Cool.
From where I am, if I can bring myself to go to the mall.
Yeah, that's the downside, right?
I mean, it's definitely not as bad as it used to be, but definitely not as crowded.
That's for sure.
I don't know. It would have been nice if I didn't see a date when they were going to be there, so I guess I'm just going to have to keep an eye out on it.
I think the dates apply for all the stores. So August 6th for the first one, September 3rd for the next one, and October 8th for the one after.
I may have to check it out.
I'm looking forward to it. It'll give it a little bit of a different feel, I think, for not what I would call competitive Halo, but just local LAN Halo tournament type of things. So maybe we can get Kenny.
Yeah, I might be able to sneak out to the August 6th one. That's on a Sunday, so I may have to go out there for a little while.
Yeah. I may see if we can get Kenny on here and he can explain a little bit more, because I think he's the main driver behind the Microsoft Store tournaments. And he and DJ Blue were working on this for a while. I know at least since last year, they've been working with the Microsoft Stores to do these kinds of Halo, quote-unquote, LAN tournaments at the stores. So it'll be interesting to see how these turn out and what the turnout is across the world at the Microsoft Stores, and see if it's something that can just continue to be done. And almost, I would almost say maybe potential for pro teams to maybe pick up some new talent.
It could be. You never know.
I think if some of the pro teams, I know there's like organizations out there, so maybe like how you have scouts that go out to universe or high schools to scout for sports talent. Maybe some teams will have the same thing on the HCS side of the house.
Well, I'm sure they'll have people watching the winners in each category. So you probably like the top five or top 10 players on each tournament. So
yeah, I wonder if this
nice thing about video games is it can be recorded and replayed.
Yeah. And I was wondering if there's definitely more stores than to really fit on any one particular stream, unless each store is going to have their own streaming setup for these tournaments, which I don't think the Microsoft Store has before streamed anything from the Bellevue tournaments that have been done. But maybe it's something that they'll change up, and or maybe there'll be a featured store that the Halo stream could host or whatever.
Well, you know, if it's going to be a monthly thing, they may, you know, they may just on, you know, each month stream from a different store.
Yeah, I could see that.
Or, you know, they may do the same thing like PAX does, and, you know, some of the conventions, and just have like two or three channels, and, you know, each store streams to a channel.
Yeah, that's kind of what I'm like. If we were to have multiple stores do it, then yeah, it would have to be multiple channels or a store that is, or each store would have to have their own Twitch channel or Mixer channel. So anyways, check out the list up on the Halo Waypoint news article. See if there's a Microsoft store near you to go look at participating. The HCS Summer Finals were this weekend during San Diego, and a little bit of a surprise for the results of the tournament. Splice knocked out Optic Gaming of the winner's bracket, and then Optic Gaming beat Team Envious in the loser's bracket, and then Splice beat Optic Gaming 4-2 in the grand finals to take the first place championship title from DreamHack Atlanta for the summer 2017 season. So that's a little bit of a shakeup a little bit. There's not much that the Green Wall has done to put themselves in a bad spot before, and this is the first time that I think we've seen them in the loser's bracket in over a year? Maybe since the X Games?
Yeah, I would say since the X Games. I don't think Optic's been in the losing bracket since then. I can't even remember if they were there then.
Well, that was right before it wasn't Ogre 2, it was Lethal went from I'm blanking on the team name, but what the I'm embarrassing myself. What Snipedown's former team had the brothers on it. I'm blanking. I don't know why I'm forgetting this name. Someone help me, please, in the chat.
It's definitely not going to be me.
Oh, jeez. don't know why I'm forgetting this team name.
I don't keep up with it that much.
Evil Geniuses, that's it.
Dust Google is your
Evil Geniuses.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, because he was on EG. Yeah, he was on Evil Geniuses with Snipe Down. And then Lethal split off onto Optic Gaming, and then once that happened, Optic Gaming has been an unstoppable force until the World Championship. Or sorry, not the World Championship. The spring season where Evil Geniuses took them out, and now Splice just took them out. So maybe we're starting to see a final shakeup of the Greenwall not being as impenetrable as it has been in the past.
Well, the other teams are starting to figure out their play style and find workarounds to, you know, get around how they control a match. So, you know, it's only a matter, you know, people can only stay on top for so long, you know, before, you know, other teams start figuring out strategies to counteract.
Yeah.
You know, how they play the game. You know, that's one of the things that, you know, in an esport, your play style almost needs to constantly evolve to stay at the top.
Yep. And when you're at the top for so long, you can't really develop too much as far as new strategies. And that's when, once other teams finally figure it out. But I think this is good for HCS because now there's a little more excitement into what team will win. And I think a little more, they'll provide a little more entertainment for maybe those that aren't quite interested fully into the HCS scene, that are more kind of a casual watcher. But being able to see different teams win at different, because you don't have the same NBA or NFL champions every year. It's usually a different team that's doing it, or that's winning from year to year based on roster changes or all that kind of stuff. So it's a good thing, I think, for the HCS scene to see a lot of this change up a little bit and starting to see these other teams starting to finally make a dent in Optic Gaming's streaks and be able to provide for those casual watchers something to look forward to other than just saying, oh, well, Optic Gaming is likely going to win, so there's not going to be much excitement when it comes to watching.
Yeah, not much reason to watch. Yeah. Well, I mean, it'd provide more excitement for, you know, everybody.
Yeah.
The people that really get into it and, you know, your casual players or casual watchers. Because, okay, you know, now, you know, Optic Gaming has been beaten, so it's not a guaranteed thing that they're going to win.
Yeah, it's happened twice in a row.
Having that unpredictability in the competitions definitely makes it a lot more interesting.
I would agree. So congratulations to Splice. The next season, the fall season, is going to start on August 23rd. The first two matches will be taking place over that weekend. And then matches 3 and 4 will take place August 30th and 31st. Roster transfer period opens on September 1st and closes on September 10th. And then the Pro League matches 5 and 6 take place September 20th and 21st. Pro League match number 7 takes place on September 27th, and then the finals will be at DreamHack Denver during October 20th through October 22nd. And for more information about the HCS and everything competitive Halo, head on over to halo.gg. Next thing is the DLC for Halo Wars 2. The campaign expansion is making ground today. So everyone that is listening to this should have the DLC available to them now. Go ahead and start downloading that thing if you haven't already. It includes the Operation Spearbreaker DLC along with the Serena multiplayer leader. And there's also a whole slew of bug fixes as per usual for every update that they have to Halo Wars 2. But the big thing, I think, is the Serena leader and the Spearbreaker DLC. We haven't had the chance to look through the Cannon Fodder, or at least I haven't. I don't know if you have, GT, but we actually haven't discussed the Halo Wars. Did we discuss the Halo Wars 2 story on the podcast? I think we did. Maybe we did.
We did.
Kind of briefly.
We didn't really go super in depth with it, but we have talked about it.
Yeah. So I think on one of the upcoming shows, we'll dive into the DLC story a little bit and just kind of talk about our general thoughts and impressions on it once we get a chance to play it. Maybe I can play co-op with you, GT.
Possible.
And then
maybe we can do it on stream.
Yes. I think that's a wonderful idea. The other thing on Waypoint is they are announcing a few more positions that are available. So they have a whole slew of positions. I didn't even know they had this many positions open at 343. But if anyone listening to this is interested in a career at 343 and are looking to get into the gaming industry, then this may be an in for you. So these are the openings that are currently available. I'm just going to list them off because there are a lot. Senior networking generalist. Not exactly sure what a generalist is. Senior animation engineer, environment artist, effects artist, technical animator, UI artist. That one would be intriguing to me. I like UI stuff. Character technical artist, workflow UX designer, character concept artist, graphics developer, senior software engineer, two of them, animation tools developer, senior software engineer, pipeline and DCC, or digital content creation, design manager, another senior software engineer, regular software engineer, I'm seeing a trend here, senior multiplayer engineer, principal SDE lead, engine architect, and lead systems developer. So there is a whole slew of job openings if you are interested in working for 343. Now, granted, a lot of these are probably looking for those that have experience in these certain fields already, but hey, it's always worth taking a shot at it. So if you're interested in working at 343, then go check out the list and apply, and best wishes to you.
I didn't see any janitorial positions.
No, I think Beamish has that one covered.
Come on.
I think that's Frankie's nighttime role. We can see how Maddie gets when things are not properly clean, so I wouldn't want to cross him.
I wouldn't either.
So that's it on the Waypoint side. On the community side of things, we have a new trailer from the custom map team SPV3. They're going to be releasing their full campaign experience on August 19th. They have a new trailer which shows off each mission and new features and weapons and a whole bunch of additional things that they've added to the game. They've basically taken aspects from every Halo game and incorporated it into the campaign that they've custom made in Halo Custom Edition. So you'll see weapons across all the games, vehicles from across all the games. They have some new weapons that they've created out of their own just creativity. So they have the fuel rod grenade and the gravity grenade. They have AI turrets. They have long swords and that drop down incineration bombs. They have the focus rifle, grenade launcher, brute shot. Sentinels that work with you. They have the major sentinels, like the big ones from Halo 2, and the campaigns as well. There's a lot of stuff that they've added into the campaign. And we are going to have Masters on either next week or the week after to talk about the final culmination of this project and get to play a little bit of the campaign over the next few weeks on stream before it releases to the public. We also have the Amazon link to the coloring book. So if you hadn't heard from our last couple podcasts, Dark Horse announced a coloring book that will be available on October 24th. You're going to head over to podtacular.com/coloring book. And also the first crate of year 2 for the Halo Legendary crate is available for pre-order until August 15th. So you have just under 4 weeks to order the crate. You can get it by each month, or you can get it for half a year, or you can get it for the full year. But if you head on over to lootcrate.com/podtacular, and then use the code podtacular at checkout, you will get $3 off your subscription. So that's it for the community stuff. Let's head into the nitty gritty. Part 2 of the complete untold story of Halo. For this part, they cover the development mostly of Halo 3 and Halo 3 ODST, with references to the unmade Halo movie and Halo Reach. So, GT, since I've been talking a lot, why don't you go ahead and kick us off with some interesting tidbits that people may not be aware of.
Well, one of the things that I found interesting is their concept on Prometheans that they were developing. If I remember correctly, it was a game that they were going to make that turned out being ODST, an early concept for the game, and how you would be able to transform into a bullet. Don't know how they were going to work that one out. That was some interesting stuff. In, you know, in this section, you know, it starts off kind of like the first section where Bungie was really disorganized when it came to actually getting in gear and start producing the game. But the one thing I did notice through, you know, as they're talking about the production of Halo 3, is they really managed to get their act together very quickly, you know, and get focused on delivering the game. You know, they, Joe Staten.
Mm-hmm.
What surprised me is that he wasn't really as involved with Halo 3's story as I initially thought.
Yeah, at least not the beginning.
No, I mean, you know, they had, you know, it was Marty and a couple of other guys that already come up with basically the bullet points of the, you know, campaign. Okay, this needs to happen, this needs to happen, this needs to happen, this needs to happen. Get from A to B to C to D. They were kind of, you know, laying out the roadmap for the campaign level, because the writers had come up with a, you know, it was a really great story, but it wasn't a Halo story. It wasn't a closing Halo story. And Marty's talking about, you know, we need to finish some storylines from Halo 2, like Miranda Keys. He wanted to get Lord Hood back into the story. And it was, you know, now I know who to blame. It was Marty's fault that Sergeant Johnson died. It's all his fault.
I was surprised to see how much Marty actually contributed to the campaign, as far as he was the one that laid out a lot of the major bullet points of what happened in the Halo 3 story, with Master Chief being kind of showing the vulnerability of the franchise that has been developed around the Master Chief, and showing Miranda dying, showing Johnson dying, and having Guilty Spark turn on you. And almost making it to where Chief doesn't feel quite as invulnerable as the previous games has made him out to be, as this like massive super soldier who's going to save humanity, and turn Halo 3 into like a dark realization that we aren't as indestructible as we think in this universe.
Yeah, you know, they really started to tell, I mean, yes, there was a lot of story about a lot of other characters in Halo 3, but it seemed like they started to tell more Chief story. You know, kind of like Halo 4 really jumped headfirst into it, but you could see that coming through in Halo 3, you know, especially his relationship with Cortana. You know, had a thought and lost it. I hate it when I do that. Let's see.
I don't know where your train of thought was going. I can't help you.
Yeah, I apparently I don't either. But the, you know, the fact that Marty was took such a big part in the story, where you know Joe basically came in after the story was pretty much laid out. And don't get me wrong, he put his touches on it. He made some changes. He said, "Now we really need to do this way." You know, he did have he was involved in it, but he wasn't involved into the depth that I thought he was. The fact that during Halo 3 production, he actually left Bungie for a while and went over to Ensemble Studios to help them get the story for Halo Wars.
Mm-hmm.
You know, to help them write the Halo Wars story. Which, yeah, that's fine, but you know, your company is producing a Halo game that's going to release. But I get why there were people that wanted to step away, because there were several of them that went on. They took a sabbatical. They had to get away. You know, after the development of Halo 1 and Halo 2 and what a grind it was and how it was just so personally draining, I can see why they didn't want to work on Halo 3, even though everybody wanted to do the game because they wanted to finish the story, but they had nothing left to give it. You know, I think it was Marty who made mention there, you know, there was a lot of healing that needed to go on to get Halo 3 done. But the nice thing is throughout the, you know, this whole section, the studio seemed like they really started to come together and be, you know, a very productive game studio. It wasn't like a bunch of chickens with their head cut off. There was more organization in the development of Halo 3. You know, instead of being chaos for the first 2.5 years, you know, they really only had a period of, it was 6 to 12 months where, you know, they were trying to, you know, get everything organized and get going.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Max Hoberman, he's, you know, one of the things he wanted to do was, you know, just take a year and figure out how to get Halo's multiplayer working on the 360, you know, on the new Xbox Live, because Xbox had basically threw away the old system and created an entirely new system. So they had to figure out how to get the features that they pioneered in Halo 2 to work with the 360. Because, you know, there were a lot of systems they used in Halo 2 that came with Xbox, you know, came with the Xbox 360's live version, you know, the party chat, the friends list, things like that. So they had to figure out how to get Halo 3 to still have that stuff, but it needed to work with the systems that were already in the platform. And of course, being Halo, you know, that did not happen. He spent the first year working on correcting stuff in Halo 2, in the matchmaking for Halo 2, and starting to write DLC for it. That was, yeah, I didn't realize that the DLC took that much time to develop. You know, the three map packs I think we got with Halo 2?
Four. We ended up having four.
Yeah, four. Yeah, I didn't realize that had ate up that much time, you know, during the production of Halo 3.
Mm-hmm.
So really, you know, Max only had 2 years to develop the Halo 3 matchmaking system, the ranking system, and getting it to work with the new Xbox Live. And then also during that time is when he started Certain Affinity, and he became, you know, an independent business working on Halo, which, you know, I thought that was pretty, you know, pretty cool that, you know, he was able to do that and still produce, you know, the matchmaking and stuff for Halo 3. You know, in my opinion, there were a lot of things that were, you know, probably the best of all the Halos in Halo 3 matchmaking, and then there was also some things that were the absolute worst. I mean, the ranking system was great, but it seemed like the you know, the matchmaking portion of the ranking system didn't always work to your advantage. You know, given what he stated in this article, I can understand why the Halo 3 matchmaking was the way it was. And for the time he had to work on it, I think he and his team did a really good job.
Well, and I think because there's not really much mentioned of the multiplayer in here other than that bit of having to redo the live infrastructure and how they lost time on that. I think that's a testament to how smoothly the multiplayer for Halo 3 went, because there's not much mention of Halo 3's multiplayer in the second part of it. And the second part's covering mostly the Halo 3 and the Halo 3 ODST side of things. I mean, this part was mostly mentioning the struggles with coming up with the story plot ideas for Halo 3, and then the whole thing with Bungie wanting to be independent from Microsoft and the contractual obligations in order to have that happen, and then the failed Halo movie, and a little touch on how they came up with the idea of the stuff that went into ODST. So there's not really much mention of Halo 3 multiplayer, and the idea of behind Firefight was slightly touched on in here as well. So it seemed like multiplayer was kind of down to kind of a science or just rock solid through the second part. Cause just looking through this article again, you see Max Hoberman at the beginning of this part talk a little bit about having to rework with the live aspect of recoding the engine and all that stuff, and then working on the Halo 2 DLC maps. But after that, there's not really any quotes from him later on in this part. So multiplayer was kind of down solid.
Yeah,
it seems like
he did make one comment in there that when he first started developing the Halo 3 multiplayer, basically him and one other guy or one or two other guys pretty much every day locked themselves into a room for a year to get it working on the new Live.
Mm-hmm.
To get the systems to work with the new Xbox Live and to figure out, you know, all the, you know, the party chat options and just getting the game to play on Live. But, you know, other than that, that looks like that was probably their biggest challenge.
Yeah.
It doesn't look like they had any major setbacks when it came to designing maps or, you know, trying to, you know, incorporating the campaign weapons into multiplayer and things like that. So, but, you know, in Halo 2, he was kind of trial by fire. Literally. He did such a good job on Halo 2, and I know he learned a lot designing the Halo 2 multiplayer, because, you know, at that time it'd never been done before. You'd never had a console multiplayer first person shooter on this scale. So to pull that off, you know, he learned a lot. And of course, you know, half the things he did for the original Xbox Live, he pretty much had to throw them away and come up with all new stuff.
Yeah. It's like, okay, Halo 2 kind of started out Xbox Live, and it's like, okay, Xbox just completely redid that. Well, that kind of sucks. Thanks for including me, folks.
Let's see. We can't use that. We can't use that. We can't use that. It was really enlightening on, you know, because I thought, you know, I always thought that Max had started on the Halo 3 multiplayer shortly after Halo 2 had finished, and, you know, they sprinkled in the map packs during it, but I never really knew that they really, you know, in that 3 years production on Halo 3, they spent a whole year just getting the matchmaking to work with the new Xbox Live.
Mm-hmm. Outside of that, though, there's not much mention of the multiplayer.
No, that's pretty much all the drama from the multiplayer. And as a whole in Halo 3, there wasn't a lot of drama in the development of it. I mean, you know, at the beginning there were some, you know, they weren't really sure which direction the missions were going to go or the campaign was going to go, but they got it figured out, and everybody got on board, and, you know, Max, or not Max, Marty was actually, you know, he came up with the bullet points, and he basically sat down with each of the writers and, you know, went through his points, and, you know, like, every one of them were like, that's exactly what I wanted to do.
Mm-hmm.
But yet all these same writers were coming up with wildly different ideas and proposing them to, for it to be actually the story. So he actually got all the writers, you know, on board to, you know, make the campaign. And, you know, Joe came in later and start, and he did make some changes to the story to make it better fit in, you know, the Halo universe. But his reaction when he found out that Marty was going to kill Sergeant Johnson, it's like, you want me to what? You can't do that. And Marty's like, well, this is the final game. Somebody has to die. It's just really, really kind of cool.
And I think it's interesting to have the audio director and composer almost be like the story guy for Halo title. And like you said earlier, I didn't realize how much Joe wasn't involved with the story of Halo 3, because you see a lot of the Vidocs, and when you kind of think of story, you kind of think of Joe was the one that really worked on a lot of the story behind that title. And he had a little bit of it leading up to the end of the game, and maybe that's why he was in the Vidocs, because he was putting some of the finishing touches on it. And originally he was supposed to be writing it, but he and one of the other guys, it's Rob, I don't remember what his last name is, but they were butting heads about it. And so Joe went off to actually work on some of the other projects that were going on around Halo. And one of the things he was talking about in here is what are some of these other stories in the franchise? And that's where we were looking at Halo Chronicles, which was going to be a game that was going to be made by a game studio that Peter Jackson was trying to create, which fell through. But a lot of that content or ideas that were generated for that game was actually used in ODST. So Joe ended up being the primary writer for ODST, so that we get a lot from that. And then we also have Halo Wars, which Joe went to work with Ensemble Studios to help set up a framework for them to be able to tell any story that they wanted within Halo. So make sure they kind of set out the ground rules, see where they want to do it in the storyline. But that's where we see a lot of the breakout of the story. And I think in here too, it wasn't until after Halo 2 where they started to look at making more of the books and the external fiction. Because they had the first trilogy of books. They had First Contact, or Fall of Reach, The Flood, and then First Strike.
Fall of Reach, The Flood, and First Strike, yeah.
As the first trilogy that they made around Halo, but then they really didn't go into the rest of the novels until after Halo 2's development was primarily done, and that's where we see a lot of the branching off of the franchise into these other stories that I think really helps defines the franchise today. I mean, I love the books. I think they provide a lot of extra detail and nitty-gritty, and now we have communities that are dedicated solely to learning and categorizing and cataloging every aspect of the Halo mythos.
Yeah. They created Lore Nuts.
They did.
And, you know, I'm thankful. You know, the Halo universe is really only one of two story arcs that I've actually really been interested in. You know, of those two story arcs, Halo is the one that I've read the most books in. It drew me in, and I was so intrigued by it. You know, and it wasn't just the Master Chief story that got me involved. It was all the other stories. You know, in the Fall of Reach, in the Flood. I mean, if you have played the original Halo game, you know probably a third of the story in the book, The Flood. There is so much more there.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they tell you about, at one point in, was it the library, you're playing as Master Chief. You come across a Marine that has just been mutilated. Matter of fact, I think there's a health pack and a shot, you know, some shotgun ammo right next to him. Well, in The Flood, they introduce you to that Marine. And, you know, to think of, you know, how much you've gone through just to get to that point, which, if I remember right, it's about halfway through the level. You get this, you know, after reading the book, you get this sense of honor that this Marine made it this far, and I've been, you know, just running and gunning and almost dying, and, you know, I'm a super soldier. You know, I think even in the book, he says, he's one badass Marine.
Mm-hmm.
it's stuff like that that really makes things a lot more enjoyable. I mean, when I play the original campaign, I have that book going through my mind, and I'm like, okay, well, you know, okay, this is what Master Chief do, but all this other stuff's going on over here.
Mm-hmm.
I wish I could go over there and see it. It just, yeah, that's one of the things that I've always loved about the Halo stuff, the Halo lore.
Maybe that's what CMT should work on next, is the campaign expanded to the book.
Also, during this time, you know, Joe Staten's also helping with the Halo movie. I mean,
which never went anywhere, unfortunately.
It
was the
point. Yeah, it didn't really. It got started. It got to the point where Weta was actually building props for basically proof of concept. They'd actually built the Warthog, which everybody has seen, you know, because it was featured in the Landfall series for the promotion of Halo 3.
Mm-hmm.
Along with a lot of the weapons and stuff that were designed for the Halo movie were used in those Landfall commercial series. And one thing I didn't notice, and I'm going to have to go rent the movie and check this.
I've never seen the movie. I just need to watch the movie.
Yeah, I've watched the movie, but I didn't pick up on it. Of course, I wasn't really looking that close either. Some of the Halo weapon props were used in District 9. The battle rifle was used in District 9, except for it's painted white.
I thought it was the assault rifle. See, but
what was the other thing?
Was
it the assault rifle or battle rifle?
I thought it was the assault rifle.
They said battle rifle.
You could be right.
But anyway, you know, some of these weapon props were actually used in...
Oh, yeah, you're right, battle rifle.
District 9. So, you know, it's something that I would, you know, I'm going to have to go back and look and watch for that stuff. You know, and of course, you know, they start talking about how, well, the thing that gets me is, you know, they had a deal with Microsoft. They had three more things they needed to do with Halo.
Mm-hmm.
And it was supposed to be two games and a movie, Halo 3 and Halo 4, which Halo 4 turned out, you know, turned into Reach. So they had these three, buckets to fill. Halo 3 was the first bucket. Halo Reach was the last bucket, and the Halo movie was supposed to be the middle bucket. Well, the
movie didn't pan out. They didn't like the direction.
The movie was canceled, but the deal is that Microsoft still wanted that middle bucket filled. So they came up with the idea of the, you know, campaign expansion for Halo 3, which, you know, after they got to thinking about, you know, after Joe and after they got to thinking about, they didn't really want to do, you know, an extended campaign with Master Chief. So they got to playing around with it. They actually rebuilt the first few levels of Halo 3 and started playing around with, you know, playing around with the soldiers' health and strength and jump height and speed and figuring out how to get the enemies to interact. You know, in Halo 3, pretty much you walk into an area with enemies and they notice you, they all start shooting at you. In, you know, ODST, yeah, that does happen to a point, but you only have a few of them shooting at you at a time. You know, and that's where they really started to develop the concept of being an ODST instead of, you know, the super soldier, which that was kind of cool.
It was the idea of trying to be somewhat or play in such a way where you're not as powerful as a Spartan and then be able to kind of fill in some of these pockets of enemies that you could engage with. And a little bit later on in this part, they talk about just walking around the city and just being in the environment, not necessarily having to be in constant combat or in a constant state of engagement like you are in the rest of the Halo games. So they kind of have this noir feel.
They wanted that hub mission to be someplace that the player explores.
Mm-hmm.
They wanted it to feel alive, which they did a really good job with. You know, Joe had stated that, you know, in the article that, you know, he really wanted to design an open world game. And ODST was kind of the first step into developing that. And a lot of the stuff that he learned there went into Destiny. Too bad he didn't put the story there. Oh.
True. Hashtag but, truth.
You know, he's talking about, you know, he really wanted to tell a story from multiple points of view. He wanted this really open world, and he wanted to make this detective type story. He wanted you to go out and find the story. And then they talk about, you know, just designing the, you know, in one of the vidocs, they talk about designing the map and the superintendent, and, you know, pretty much everybody's seen the vidoc, you know, where they're talking about the telephones ringing and things like that.
The city is alive.
Yeah. You know, they get going on developing this ODST, and, you know, they have a year to turn this out while still making Reach. So they're developing two games at the same time. So it was a constant fight for resources.
The benefit that ODST had, though, was it was using the existing engine, so they weren't rebuilding the engine like they had done for every other major Halo release. And ODST was a project of less than 20 people.
And it was a fight to get those 20 people.
Mm-hmm. And then you can blame Microsoft again for, instead of making a $30 expansion, making it a $60 game.
Well, the whole Microsoft wanted the expansion. Yeah, they wanted a $30 expansion to just add on to Halo 3.
No, Bungie wanted the $30, but then Microsoft came back and says, no, this has to be a full game.
Oh, I guess I misread that.
Yeah. Joe said the Microsoft, Xbox leadership looked at what we had said and say, hey, this is bigger than DLC. We wanted to charge $60 for it for their 2009 Christmas release.
Well, anyway, the Halo 3 expansion got really big. And I think really after they got writing on it, it probably came together pretty quickly to be a full-fledged game. Because the amount of detail that was done in ODST, you know, ODST is a damn good game. I don't care what anybody says. It is a really good game, especially for being developed inside of a year.
It's my favorite campaign out of all the Halo games.
Yeah, but anyway, you know, once I got to writing a story, I can just see the ideas flowing and saying, okay, well, we've got this big hub city. We've got five characters. Well, six, if you count Veronica. But we have, you know, these five main characters. And we want to tell each one of their stories, you know, of what happened, you know, after their pods landed. And, you know, it starts off, you know, they're like, well, they say they want to set it, you know, right there at Halo 2, where the Covenant carrier jumps away from New Mombasa. And what happens to everybody else that's left behind? You know, they didn't want to just destroy the city, but, you know, it was heavily damaged. So the storytelling, it seemed like it just really flowed from them. It had to, for the limited amount of time they had to produce it.
And again, it's one of the best campaigns, and I think it has one of the probably amongst the community one of the more favorable multiplayer modes, Firefight, mostly just because it's co-op, it's cooperative, and people really enjoy it.
It was my favorite until I went for the annual achievement.
2 hours at least.
Try four.
Oh, it took you four. Man. I think you could get it in two hours.
We did it on Lost Platoon, and it was about 4 hours. But it was a lot easier than doing it on Oni Alpha site, because on Lost Platoon you had vehicles. We got really good at jacking vehicles.
Got dust.
We
off
had so many skills. Choppers stuffed in every little corner we could find.
You got dust off them firefight skills for the back compat.
Yeah, I don't think I ever want to do that particular achievement again.
Well, at least it's just the 360 back compat, so you have that achievement, period.
Yeah, that's one achievement I don't think I'm ever going to do a video on.
I wouldn't blame you for that.
I might
that.
Say, okay, this is how you do it. You stay alive for five rounds.
And four sets. Five waves in the round, three rounds in the set. Four sets.
You had to make it to the fifth set. That's it. You know, I mean, Joe even says, after they start talking about the...
That was one of my favorite little video pieces, was him explaining Firefight.
Oh, yeah. You having Sergeant Johnson in there was definitely, even though he was dead, well, actually, at the time of the game, he was on the other side of the galaxy.
Yeah, until the very end. I'm going to look up that trailer to watch afterwards, because I missed that trailer.
Joe stated in here, you know, after discussing the story for Halo 3 ODST, you know, it rekindled his passion for in-game story. You know, using the game to tell a story, which was cool. And, you know, and it shows in the game.
Looking through the article again, too, one of the things that kind of sticks out to me is they didn't have as much of the stresses or issues that they had in the development of Halo and Halo 2. They seemed to kind of have a general idea where they wanted to go with the campaign. There was some kind of pushback on both sides, but they kind of came to a consensus. But they never got to a point where they had to just completely drop something and rebuild it in the middle of development, which I think was a strength to them. And then the very little mentioning of the Halo 3 multiplayer, and then a few people mentioning that ODST was kind of like a spark to them. I think Paul and Joe both mentioned that it was just something that kind of reinvigorated them to write stories for Halo. Like this was the kind of the golden age of Halo, in a sense. Halo 3 and Halo 3 ODST. That's where a lot of it really thrived. And then there's another big part in this part of the article, which we really haven't even talked about, which I think most people know of the back and forth between Microsoft and Bungie. I didn't know specifically that it was that they were on contract to work with a studio that Peter Jackson was putting together with Weta, called Halo Chronicles. I hadn't even heard the title Halo Chronicles before, or at least don't remember it. So that was new, but I don't think anyone is really blind to the fact that Bungie and Microsoft had their spouts, and Bungie wanted to be independent, and Microsoft required them to make three more Halo games after Halo 2 in order to become independent again. There's just a lot of discussion about the stuff that didn't happen or the stuff that went into what eventually became Halo 3 ODST. It seems to be what a lot of this part was about.
I like how they say Sadie's story was just a plot to make you spend more time in the game. That just makes it feel so cheap.
Well, and I think a lot of people know that that's kind of a spinoff of Dante's Inferno. It's Joe's kind of tribute to that, and then having a lot of inspiration from Serenity for ODST and a little bit of the Halo 3 storyline, and then having all the Serenity and Firefly cast pretty much, or at least half of the cast, in ODST.
Well, you know, the fact that the Serenity had just came out during, you know, just before production begins on this, probably had a lot to do with it.
A little bit.
It was Marty is a really big Serenity fan, or Firefly fan.
And that's where he got the idea to kill off Miranda, Johnson, and Guilty Spark. And to be honest, it worked. I didn't quite feel as sorry for Miranda, but for Johnson and Guilty Spark, I definitely did.
Well, you know, the way they did Guilty Spark, you know, after what he did, you wanted him dead.
But at the same time, you feel Johnson,
you wanted him dead.
Yeah, but at the same time, you feel a little sorry for him.
I didn't.
I did. I guess that's just me.
I still hadn't got over Combat Evolved.
Fair point. That's a good point. But yeah, going back to this whole being the bullet concept and the early Prometheans, it'd be interesting to see what their vision of Prometheans were before 343 introduced them in Halo 4. Because I'm kind of happy to see that this whole be the bullet concept of being able to turn into like a projectile or something, like that doesn't quite sound Halo-ish to me.
No, I can't see how they would do that inside the Halo series anyway.
Yeah. But the ODST that you're playing as in Halo 3 ODST was eventually supposed to become a Promethean.
Which is another concept that Halo 4 ran with.
Yep. So I think we've covered most of the articles in here, the kind of the specific stuff.
Yeah, we're pretty much right up to the fact that ODST is shipped and they're cranking up production on Reach to get it done.
And there wasn't really much talk of Halo Wars in here.
The only mentioned it was where Joe Staten went to Ensemble to help him with the story. That's all I remember.
Yeah. So,
of course, I think at that time, Halo Wars, yeah, it was still like another 2.5 years away.
Halo Wars came out in 2009, I think.
No, ODST came out in 2008. 2009.
You're right. But
Reach came out in 2010.
I'm looking up on Google.
Halo Wars came out after Reach, right?
Halo Wars came out on on March 3rd, 2009.
Oh.
No, it came out before Reach. I guess that came out before ODST then.
Yeah, because
yeah, it did.
ODST launched in September.
Yep. So yeah, Halo Wars came out before ODST. And Pins was asking a question in the Twitch chat. He was asking if there was any Battlestar Galactica influences, and I believe I remember hearing it at some point that there were influences. It's just there's nothing that has been mentioned in this recap of Halo's development that has been mentioned Battlestar specifically. But I believe you're correct. So that wraps it up for our part two discussion of the complete and untold story of Halo. Depending on when we have Masters on from the SPV3 mod for Halo Custom Edition, we'll either talk about part 3 next week or the week after. And part 3 goes into the transfer of power of the Halo franchise from Bungie to 343 Industries and the path that Halo has taken down Halo 4 and Halo 5. So thanks for joining us, everybody, on this adventure as we go down and look a little bit deeper at Halo's developmental history. I know for me, it's a really cool look and perspective into the development of the franchise that I hold close and dear to my heart and love so much. I think for most people listening to this, they probably say the same thing. Again, you can go check this out over on vice.com. Just search for Halo and it'll be the latest Halo article up there. But thank you for listening to this episode. We will be back next week either with Masters talking about SPB3, or we'll be talking about the third part of this article and the final part, bringing us up to date where we are with Halo today. So check us out on our social media. We are on Facebook, Twitter, Twitch, Instagram, YouTube, Mixer, all that kind of stuff. If we have it, just search for Podtackler on whatever platform and you can find us. And no MySpace pins, because I have a feeling you're going to ask that question, or Confell, or whoever's going to ask that question. No MySpace. Also, check us out on the podcast network. We're part of a network of gaming-specific shows, which includes Guardian Radio, Critcast, Podcast 76, The Learning Cliff, Work in Progress, and How to Murder Time. You can find them over at thepodcast.com and let them know that we sent you. For those that are interested in Destiny, Guardian Radio has just released an episode with their Destiny 2 beta feedback. So if you had a chance to play the beta, or if you missed out on the beta, then I would definitely recommend going and listening to their latest episode. Also, remember you can go get the latest loot crate pre-order it from up until August 15th to secure your pre-order. And that includes the next line of Halo Icons figures, which is going to be Cortana. And the theme of the crate is going to be Awakening, centered around Halo 4. Again, go to lootcrate.com/podtackler and then use the code podtackler at checkout for $3 off your crate. That'll wrap it up for us tonight. Thanks everyone for tuning in. We will see you and talk to you next week.